Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24-7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Trump's new Attorney General, now in charge of the Mueller investigation, who appears to have neither the legal, ethical, moral, or judicial qualifications to be the nation's top lawman. Furthermore, his appointment itself, according to a former Solicitor General and George Conway, the husband of White House advisor Kellyanne Conway, is a betrayal of, quote, the entire structure of our charter document, meaning, quote, constitutionally, Matthew Whitaker is a nobody. Harry Litman, a former United States Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, joins us to discuss his article at the Washington Post, "The Mueller Probe Could Be in Mortal Danger," as well as his article at the New York Times, "Congress Can Issue Subpoenas, Will They Matter?" and whether, at best, Whitaker will tell Trump what Mueller has on him, or at worst, shut down the investigation and bury the report. We'll examine how Whitaker essentially auditioned for his job as a Trump loyalist by going on CNN to attack the Mueller probe. Then the White House engineered his appointment as Attorney General Jeff Sessions' chief of staff so that Whitaker could be the White House's eyes and ears at the Justice Department. And now this unqualified ideologue with bizarre and reactionary views on the law itself is the acting Attorney General of the United States. Then we'll speak with Corey Brettschneider, a professor of political science at Brown University, as well as a visiting professor of law at Fordham Law School, and author of the new book, The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. He joins us to discuss whether Trump has found his Roy Cohn in Matthew Whitaker and how Whitaker does not believe in Marbury versus Madison, which is the foundation of our judiciary, but believes that judges should be chosen on whether they, quote, are people of faith. Do they have a biblical view of justice? Then finally, although there has been yet another mass shooting not far from where we are broadcasting, we'll pause on covering this tragedy until there is more information and instead look into the important races left hanging after the election in Florida and Georgia and speak with the author of the new book, The Embattled Vote in America, From the Founding to the Present. Alan Lichtman, a political historian of American politics at American University, who has correctly predicted the outcomes of all presidential elections since 1984, including, against all odds, Trump's election, joins us to discuss the looming possibility of impeachment if Trump moves to fire Mueller. And joining us now is Harry Litman, a former United States Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, who currently is a professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. And he has an article at the Washington Post, "The Mueller Probe Could Be in Mortal Danger," as well as an article at the New York Times, "Congress Can Issue Subpoenas, Will They Matter?" Welcome to Background Briefing, Harry Litman.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be here.
Well, thank you. And it's a pretty alarming development. Just starting with yesterday's very combative press conference, it was pretty clear that Donald Trump was laying down a marker, basically saying if the Congress investigates him, it'll be war. And, you know, if they want to make a deal, then no investigations. And we also know that this character that he's put in charge of the Justice Department is somebody that's effectively auditioned for the job for some time by appearing on CNN, obviously getting Trump's attention. The White House engineered his move to the Justice Department to become chief of staff of Jeff Sessions, and now they've made him the acting attorney general. Let's deal with the constitutionality. There's some people questioning that, including Kellyanne Conway's husband.
That's right. Yeah, he's written an op-ed, as has Neil Katyal, a really respected constitutional scholar, suggesting that what's certainly clear about it is also unconstitutional about it, and that is an attempt to bypass the Senate's ability to confirm the Attorney General. There is a statute they are purporting to act under, they are acting under, which is designed, however, for kind of emergency situations where someone has died or resigned, and you can install a replacement for a discrete period of time. Of course, here that's not what happened under any reasonable interpretation. Even the Sessions quote-unquote resignation letter says, as you requested. It was clear that before the votes were even counted in the midterm that the chief of staff, John Kelly, called him up and said, you're to resign now. In fact, he asked for a couple days for a leave of stay of execution, and it was not granted. So it's kind of make believe that this was a real resignation, and that could matter under the law, which is designed for these sort of surprise events where all of a sudden things are left unoccupied. And as you say, Matt Whitaker, who, you know, it was obviously part of a plan to put him in, has one credential and one credential only. That's he's a political actor with loyalty to the president. He's previously expressed the views that the probe has gone too far. He actually comes to first to Sessions and now to the president via the recommendation, this hasn't really been reported, of Leonard Leo, the head of the Federalist Society, who is also the Sherpa for Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court appointees. So it's very alarming. My best guess is that the constitutional argument won't succeed, and in any event, it will take quite a while for it to work its way through the courts. You'll first have to get someone withstanding, and then there'll be a lawsuit. But by that time, Whitaker will have had a chance to do quite a lot of damage to the probe, and there's real reason to think that he might.
Well, let's talk about that. He's already in charge of Mueller at this point.
I actually think we're way, you know, this is government by tweet, but that's not an effective way to put someone in. He's going to be any second for all I know. It's happened in the last half hour, but the actual order from the president appears not quite to have been entered, but it doesn't. As we talk now, I think it's still Rod Rosenstein, but that's a matter of, you know, hours or minutes. So yes, he will, if he's not already in charge, he will be very, very soon.
So we know that this guy is basically a propagandist, and he doesn't have the facts, and he doesn't have much standing in the law and experience. And we know he's a political hack, if not a political executioner. So if he goes to Mueller, is there any way that Mueller can say to him, look, this is what we found out? Because I'm pretty sure that Mueller's pretty much found out that our president, who acts like a criminal, may well be a criminal, if not a traitor. I mean, what we've learned so far from the Mueller probe is pretty alarming. But if there's some big shoes to drop, which I'm absolutely certain there is there any way that this guy can be told, look, this is what's going on here, and this is what we need to make public, and this is what we need to deal with? Or is he just completely blind? He doesn't care, just like Trump. They just want to shut this thing down.
No, look, I think there is. He is basically a political actor. He's a failed two-time candidate in Iowa and ran Rick Perry's campaign. But he was a U.S. attorney for a time, and it's clear he understands that Mueller is an estimable figure. He will, you know, one worry, of course, is he's made his put himself where he is now by being the, quote, eyes and ears of the White House. So if Mueller gives that to him, will he pass it along, which would be, you know, completely illegal. But I think if it's explosive enough, he will, you could imagine him staying his hand. And, of course, in order to shut him down, there are rules in place. You know, he could run roughshod over them or maybe even try to repeal them. But it has to be, in order to countermand a particular investigative step, he has to find that it's deeply inappropriate based on DOJ policies. And in doing so, he has to give great deference to the views of the special counsel. So if we've got smoking guns here, it will not be easy for him to simply overlook them. Now, of course, the report itself, when it reveals this, is it will be within his power to try to keep it from the public eye. It's his judgment whether it's in the public interest to release it. And we know Team Trump has previously sought to keep it from being released. So that's a concrete fear. But he is, I worry deeply about him because other potential attorneys general have at least functioned within the culture of the Department of Justice. Jeff Sessions is a good example, or John Ashcroft, where they've understood that there are things you can't, you know, there's a certain DNA that you can't violate. He is not that guy. He's completely uncredentialed. So he might. But if we have pictures of Trump getting a payoff from Putin, it would be so precarious and career-ending and probably criminal for him to smother it that I don't think he will. Of course, if you're wrong, Ian, and what we have is more equivocal, that's the perfect situation for him to, you know, basically, you know, shut things down.
And again, I'm speaking with Harry Litman, who's a former United States Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, who's currently a professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. And he has an article at the Washington Post, "The Mueller Probe Could Be in Mortal Danger," as well as an article at the New York Times, "Congress Can Issue Subpoenas, Will They Matter?" So just to sum up, as soon as Whitaker finds out what Mueller knows, which presumably being his boss, he's able to find out in either, we think that the full report is perhaps close to being finished. So,
well, at least on the obstruction of justice charges.
Right.
There are, you know, three discrete subject matters, but yes.
Yeah, but
the obstruction may be close.
Yeah, but couldn't you make the case that we're in a situation where obstruction of justice is happening in plain sight? I mean, that's what my concern is, that this person has been put in there for the express reason to obstruct justice. So
you actually can make the case and imagine. I mean, he has already said that he will, you know, Sessions, like any attorney general in history, listened when the professional folks said you have to recuse. He's already made it clear that if the professional folks tell him he has to recuse, he will thumb his nose at them and not do it, which is a stunning thing to say as you're taking the helm of the Department of Justice. But if he's doing that and there's actually a whiff of obstruction in his own appointment, now we have this impossible tangled web where, in addition to everything else, he is a criminal subject in the probe. And so it's beyond nasty. And in that situation, he absolutely, absolutely, absolutely would have to recuse. But that the final decision rests with the Attorney General of the United States. So if he's ready to really be political and brazen like his sponsor, he could try to tough it out.
So just to sum up then, he could become a spy and help Trump in by letting him know what they have on him.
That would be illegal, but he could.
He could. And he certainly could. And I don't know whether he could use the word legal, but he could certainly bury the report, right? There's no obligation for this report to be made public.
No, and that seems to be, you know, his real decision to make. That could be done. My instinct is, especially with the new House majority, that it's fanciful to believe that the report will never see the light of day. But it could be bottled up pretty well and certainly give Trump a lot of kind of time to ride it out. And remember, I don't think this is his decision, but the report could be anything from a full-bodied report to a simple bare-bones recitation of conclusions and actions in the absence of a real exposition of all the evidence he's found. And so, you know, that for me, the most frightening thought, and one I've always believed couldn't happen, but there's so many things with Trump I believe couldn't happen, and then they happen, is that the truth will not out. That the, you know, down the line, he actually may succeed in keeping from public view and even history his various misdeeds, and that is so unsettling, and I would say even un-American, although that's a dramatic way to put it. So that's a horrifying prospect, and it is much more likely now with Whitaker's appointment.
Well, that on the surface you would think in a reasonable world would be sufficient for the public to be outraged. Because why would somebody hide something if they're not guilty? And that's always been the suspicion from day one with Trump, why he's never cleared the air about the charges. And implications that somehow Putin has something over him and that there was collusion and conspiracy in terms of Russians helping him, whether he was a what the Russians call a useful idiot or a co-conspirator, it sort of doesn't matter. So that's the landscape. So given that already Whitaker said that it would be crossing the red line to indict Trump and or his family, that's
to inquire into finances, which is 100% wrong, by the way. It's well within the line because Rosenstein has already concluded that. I don't mean to interrupt your question, but I just want to say one of the most troubling aspects of this guy is he holds views that are 180% at odds with, you know, the law of the land and what you know, the Department of Justice is committed to, starting with the view that that Marbury versus Madison, the absolute foundation of judicial review, it was wrongly decided. I mean, he cannot hold to these views and be the chief federal law enforcement officer in the country. Something's got to give, and they are horrifyingly out of step views. But I'm sorry, Ian.
Let me add to that. I mean, he's apparently, people who cover the Justice Department are saying that this man is far more conservative than even Jeff Sessions. His background is extraordinary. In 2014, he basically, in an interview, he was a Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Iowa, in a television interview, he basically said that judges should be Christian, and he proposed blocking non-religious groups from judicial appointments. That's amazing.
Can you imagine?
It's
beyond
belief.
He did say he would give a litmus test based on, you know, views of God. He said before that life begins at conception, he believes, which would make abortion murder. And it's not just extreme views, but they are views that are 100% out of step with the law of the land that he is the final authority to enforce. You know, you get the view that life begins at conception is tantamount, and is how much of a leap to saying, you know, any abortion is a crime. And that's not a position the Department of Justice can justifiably advance. You can't justifiably stand behind the notion that Marbury versus Madison is wrong or judges need religious test. Now, maybe he has an explanation for that. You know, I was the United States attorney, and I didn't believe in the death penalty, but I had to set that aside. I brought a death penalty case. That's the way it goes. But, I mean, for him to assume office with these beyond radical, it's not that just the views are politically radical, but they are deeply unconstitutional and anti-constitutional. That's, you know, the chief enforcer of the Constitution may not hold these views and execute his job. So it's a mess.
Well, but on a personal level, let alone the judicial alarm that his pronouncements raise, Whitaker was a paid advisor to one of these bottom-feeding invention promotion companies in Florida.
That's right.
Which was accused by the U.S. government of running a multi-million dollar scam. And court records indicate that Whitaker sent threatening emails to some of the alleged scam's victims who tried to complain. So that's something to look into. On the surface, it does, you know, raise basic questions about his character. And, of course, somebody like that would fit in well with Trump.
If he's, you know, just been a very ambitious guy for years, looking for any avenue to advance. He ran for treasurer in 2002, Senate in 2014, got himself appointed U.S. Attorney, and was really a kind of a mediocrity, you know, just looking for, he said himself that he went to take his post on CNN in the hopes of bringing himself to the attention of the president. You know, he's just someone who's, you know, been looking to advance one way or another, and has now done it by being the loyalist in the White House. By the way, some chief of staff, that must have been for Sessions, knowing he's the eyes and ears of the White House, which was basically at war with him. So yeah, I think he's a not very distinguished guy. His legal views are, you know, unnuanced and wrong. He kind of presents well, right? He's a former Iowa football player, and he's got this sort of stolid feet on the ground view, and I'm told he can. He is a very heavy-handed manager, but you know he's not. He's not within 50 miles of being considered to be the Attorney General of the United States, and the, you know, he's there. Whether or not it's a technical obstruction of justice, it's certainly a worrying prospect that the clear and only reason he's there is to try to be Mueller's guy overseeing the investigation, be Trump's guy overseeing the investigation of Trump. And, you know, right. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
Well, just in closing, we suspect, at least I do, that the Mueller inquiry, because so much evidence has already surfaced about Trump's ties to Russia and the extent of Russian money laundering and how his business was essentially propped up by the Russians for decades, there's an awful lot of information already on the record, and you've got some key players like Manafort and Cohen who have been deeply involved in this, who are already testifying, and Mueller already presumably knows all about this stuff. So
yeah, that's right.
we have a president who, if he's not a criminal and a traitor, he certainly acts like a gangster. When he talks about Sessions, he basically says, I'm mad at him because he didn't protect me. I wanted the Attorney General to be my lawyer to protect me from the law, not to be the chief law enforcement of the United States. That is not hyperbole. That is the attitude the president has. So is this guy that he's just put in there basically his consigliere?
Yeah, has he found his Roy Cohn?
Right.
Of course, Roy Cohn was a smart, cunning, malevolent guy. This guy, I think, is much less nuanced and legally sophisticated. And, you know, the Department of Justice is a very big place with quite a lot of important initiatives to oversee, and now he oversees them all. I mean, the short answer to your question, I don't like to be too alarmist or knee-jerk, but I see no other reason. Yes, he's his guy. He's the guy he wanted to put the boot on the neck of the Mueller probe. I don't see any other way to explain it. And, you know, whether he'll be able to do it will, I think, in part depend on the strength of the evidence. And there is now at least the possibility of some minimal House oversight. But there's the real possibility that this just all happens in plain view and that the American people are not, contrary to your hypothesis, you know, outraged enough to keep it from happening. That's, you know, Trump has normally bet in that direction to date, and he's been, his bets have paid off more than they haven't. So it's all, you know, just right. For people who care about the rule of law and the truth, it's a very alarming situation.
Well, Harry Lipman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And again, Harry Lipman's a former United States Attorney and Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, who's currently a professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. And he has an article at the Washington Post, The Mueller Probe Could Be in Mortal Danger, as well as an article at the New York Times, Congress Can Issue Subpoenas, Will They Matter? We're going to take a brief station break back looking into whether Trump has found his Roy Cohn in Matthew Whitaker. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Corey Brettschneider, who's a professor of political science at Brown University, where he teaches constitutional law and politics, as well as a visiting professor of law at Fordham Law School. His writings appeared in Time, Politico, and the New York Times, and he's the author of the new book just out, The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. Welcome to Background Briefing, Corey Brettschneider.
Thanks. Pleasure to talk to you again.
And already there's some criticism of the Attorney General being appointed, the fact Kellyanne Conway's husband,
yeah,
says constitutionally Matthew Whitaker is a nobody. That, of course, may well be accurate, but it's not going to change things, because you sue under the Vacancies Act, it'll take a long time, and this guy could do an awful lot of damage since he's already now in charge overseeing Mueller. I was just reading a piece that you wrote, Corey, back in April the 21st of this year, and the last paragraph you talk about Walter Dellinger, the former head of the Office of Legal Counsel, arguing that despite the memos, the president can in fact be indicted while in office. And then the last line you write is, with the threat looming that Trump will fire Rosenstein and replace him with a crony, the pressure is on to seek an indictment now. Now, this character has already said an indictment of the president is crossing a red line, indeed even going after his family and his finances is crossing a red line. So now that Roger Stone is apparently memos that Mueller has asked the White House to hand over visitors' logs and emails connected to Stone, where do you think this stands now? My sense is that Mueller doesn't really want to indict Trump, but he may well go after the family.
Yes, it could be that he's closing in slowly. And there's, of course, some unconfirmed reports that it might be Don Jr. that's looked at. And so that is another way to do it, is to go around the president. I do think, as a matter of principle, he has the ability to do it, but a court would ultimately decide that. The main thing right now, frankly, I think I'm very worried. This looks a lot like the Saturday Night Massacre, where, of course, President Nixon ordered Elliot Richardson to fire Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor at the time, looking into his wrongdoing in Watergate. When Richardson refused, there was a second round of a second attorney general who refused. And then finally, when they found Robert Bork, he complied. And, you know, I worry that this is Robert Bork and that he will try to either fire Mueller or otherwise undermine the investigation. So I think there are doubts about the constitutionality, as you brought up. Kellyanne Conway's husband, ironically, is the one in the New York Times saying that. The most direct thing that we can do right now is push for a Protect Mueller bill. The Senate Judiciary Committee in the spring passed that out of committee. Senator Flake and others are pushing for it. That is really urgent, that the president be reined in by this bill that would say that Mueller could only be fired by the Attorney General for cause. And I'm a strong supporter, not just of the bill, but of it being passed immediately, because I think we need legislation and court intervention to prevent this from happening.
Well, what's at stake, I think, in the broadest sense, is you can tell from Donald Trump that he's in a state of panic, and he's talking about a war with the House, the new Democratic House, unless they make a deal with him and not investigate him. He says, basically, I'm willing to deal with you, and we can make a deal, but don't go after me. You know, he does talk like a gangster. I mean, his attitude to Sessions was totally gangster-like, saying, you know, I want to get rid of this guy. He's a total failure because he didn't protect me. I want a personal lawyer to protect me from the law, not the person who's in charge of upholding the laws of the United States. I mean, it's extraordinary. And then more recently, talking about his friend MBS, the little thug running Saudi Arabia that clearly murdered this journalist, he said it was a bad concept. You know, I would have done it better. I mean, it was the worst cover-up I've ever seen. There just does no sense that this man has any personal morality or any sense of human rights. It's just extraordinary. So given that, I see what's at stake from his point of view. But from my point of view, I want the American people to know what this man has done, what his record's all about. Yeah. And that's what Mueller's been looking into. And I don't think until we see that the scales are going to come off the eyes of all of these people in the Fox bubble. You know, this is what's at stake, is essentially the real possibility is that our president is not just a criminal, but a traitor.
Yes, and I think, as you say, transparency is the most important thing here, preserving the information. So the Protect Mueller bill, of course, you know, would keep the options open on that front. I guess if he really does try to fire him or has his attorney general fire him, that there is a sort of break glass scenario where the documents are dumped either to the public or to the not just the Republicans but the Democrats as well on the House Judiciary Committee, with the thought that in when the next term begins, then they can pick up a very serious investigation and not have to start from scratch. But we have to know what happened. We have to know what's in this information. If it's not going to be an indictment, then, you know, a lot of people are suggesting that he won't indict because of the constitutional, the perceived, incorrectly in my view, constitutional bar on it. Well, then impeachment is the way to go if these allegations are true. And what that requires is turning over the documentation to the House Judiciary Committee. I have to believe that he also is sharing information possibly with the Southern District of New York and other U.S. attorneys throughout the system. And so, you know, the thought is you won't be able to kill the truth by just firing this person. But he's got to prepare for all these eventualities. And as citizens, we have to push for legislation to protect this investigation.
But Corey Breschneider, the new attorney general, will be in charge of the Southern District in New York. He'll be in charge of those people. He's already Mueller's boss as we speak. Yeah. At the very least, he can leak to Trump, and he was put there to be the White House's eyes and ears in the Justice Department. He could leak to them what's going on in the report. I mean,
yes.
My question would be, if he sits down with Mueller and Mueller says, look, this is the most extraordinary situation we've ever had in our history. We have so much against this president and his administration. It's just appalling and shocking. And you really should sit down and read what we have so far. Now, I'm making the assumption that this man is guilty. And frankly, I've talked to enough people and read enough books written about his background to get the distinct impression that I'm right and those that are enabling Trump are wrong. But I'm also, you know, none of this is proven yet, and that's the whole point of Mueller. So
right.
A real decent person, given that information, assuming that that's the case, would basically, even if he is Trump's Roy Cohn, would be given pause. But the question would be, what kind of a guy is this guy? And we got all these people in the on the Republican side in the Senate who are enablers, and even the, one of his critics now, Senator Lindsey Graham, has turned into his number one loyalist. So there's a tremendous lack of morality and decency out there. So, you know, I feel like the whole country's on trial at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I say in the book, really the point of my new book, The Oath in the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, is that we can't just trust the virtue of a president, and that the framers put in a series of checks that were not just internal but fundamentally outside the executive branch. So that's why I think the House, and particularly the Democrats in the House, because of the they'll have control in the next session, getting the access to the information is fundamental. Now, here is another thing that I say in that piece in Politico, which is that if these indictments have been filed, some of them sealed potentially, and maybe it's not the president, but potentially the president, or maybe it's family members, that those there is some judicial protection, that the Justice Department can't just withdraw an indictment. They need to have permission of the courts in order to have them withdrawn. Now, I'm not saying that's a failsafe, but it has that structure of having another branch check the decisions of executive officials within the Justice Department. So Congress, I think that's our best bet. Courts are number two, and of course the legislation as well. But what's fundamental is that we not trust this White House, and that we use the mechanisms that the framers provided for us to stop this president.
Well, but already I think Trump is showing complete contempt. I mean, look at the people he's put in his cabinet. It's all a case of putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank. the worst possible people are charged with overseeing a department that they have publicly stated they want to destroy or undermine. That happened to the EPA guy, and now you've got this character at the Department of Justice who is a total legal lightweight. He's considered to be even more conservative than Jeff Sessions and more of an ideologue. And he obviously auditioned to get this attention of the White House by going on CNN and being a defender of Trump. But one of the most alarming things that's turned up is that when he was running for the U.S. Senate recently in Iowa. He was on a TV show where he was asked about judges' judicial philosophy. And I'll quote him when he wants to know about a judge's judicial philosophy. Quote, "I'd like to see things like their worldview, what informs them, how they have lived their life. Are they people of faith? Do they have a biblical view of justice?" Which I think is very important. I mean, my God, it sounds like this guy's a dominionist.
And the more that we look into it, the more worrying it is. It's not just a question of his loyalty to Trump. It's also his basic, I'd say, intellectual capacities. There was a bizarre thing posted where he said that he thought that the case establishing the right of courts to review the constitutionality of legislation was one of the worst decisions ever.
Marbury versus Madison, you know, right?
Yeah, Marbury versus Madison. I mean, it is the core idea of the system. And then, of course, in the same breath, he also laments the court during the New Deal period for not striking down legislation during that period. So the idea that within one paragraph he's sort of moving between hating judicial review and saying there's not enough of it, I mean, to me it suggests this isn't a serious person when it comes to understanding our constitutional system, and yet he's got probably one of the very top jobs in our legal system.
Well, there's also questions about his personal integrity. I mean, he was previously a paid advisor to one of these bottom-feeding invention promotion companies in Florida that was accused by the U.S. government of running a multi-million dollar scam, and court records show that Whitaker sent threatening emails to the alleged victims of these scams who had tried to complain about being ripped off. That is certainly not a good reference, is it?
No, this attorney general cares more about loyalty than he cares about anything else, and from what we can tell, and he sort of, you know, feeds into Trump's desire for loyalty above all things, and that's not supposed to be the way the attorney general works. The idea is that the office is an independent law enforcement agency, and the idea that the attorney general is the president's lawyer is about as far as you can get from the way that this is supposed to operate. And my worry is, though, that Trump found somebody to subvert the purposes of the system. It has weaknesses in it. It, has the potential for abuse. And the framers realized that a president bent on becoming a monarch or a dictator could achieve those ends. They put devices, they laid them down for us to use, but, you know, we'll do our best. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried. I mean, it's very concerning.
Well, in closing, about Jeff Sessions, Trump once said, "Where is my Roy Cohn?" So do you think he's found his Roy Cohn?
Look, Roy Cohn is one of the most devious and dishonest people in the country in our history. The support for McCarthy, the corruption in New York, and, it's Trump's mentor. Now, it would take a lot of, let's just say it, evil to live up to that. So I'm not sure that he's going to fulfill that role. But he's certainly, trying out for it. And that's very worrying.
Well, Corey Blechschneider, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian. Pleasure, as always.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Corey Blechschneider, who's a professor of political science at Brown University, where he teaches constitutional law and politics, as well as a visiting professor of law at Fordham Law School. His writings appeared in Time, Politico, and The New York Times, and he's the author of the new book just out, The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. We're going to take a brief station break and back discussing the looming possibility of impeachment if Trump moves to fire Mueller.
Dixieland, Dixieland, I was born
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Alan Lichtman, an American political historian who teaches at American University and has studied both the American right and the presidency. He is the author of The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction systems correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election, when against all odds he predicted a Trump victory. He's the author of the national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, and his latest book is The Embattled Vote in America, From the Founding to the Present. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And Alan, we've had an election, but the embattled vote is more embattled than ever. It was bad enough before the elections and during the elections, but now, after the election, several incredibly important races have essentially got hung juries. And the idea that we're going to have a recount in Florida raises all kinds of memories of 2000, butterfly ballots, etc. So what confidence can we have? Obviously, it's hard to have confidence in our electoral systems in general, but what confidence do you have in these recounts?
Not much. Not in Florida, not in Georgia. Georgia was the poster child of voter suppression under Secretary of State Brian Kemp, who both was administering the election and running as the Republican candidate for governor, one of the most blatant conflicts of interest we've seen in this country, and he was responsible for a whole host of voter suppression measures. And one has to wonder, in a fair election, if he actually would have won that contest against Stacey Abrams. So I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Georgia. And, of course, we know Florida is notorious for its political biases. But I have to say one very positive thing did come out of Florida. The voters are not the same, it seems, as the Republican government. The voters voted to re-enfranchise some 1.4 million former felons. People who had paid their debt to society yet had lost their civil rights to vote. Now they can vote again. And if those folks had the opportunity to vote, there's no doubt these elections would have turned out quite differently. And we don't know what other voter suppression measures may have turned those Florida elections as well as Georgia. You know, I think the last count in the Senate race, the Democrat Bill Nelson was only about 22,000 votes behind. You know, that's a whisker in Florida where you're casting something like 9 million ballots. So who knows?
Well, it's, you know, there are records of extraordinary abuse of the electoral system and disappearing ballots. Just recently, the Democratic supervisor of elections was found in May to have broken state and federal laws by destroying ballots cast in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's 2016 Democratic primary.
Yes.
So it's not just the Republicans. There's something, because of course the butterfly ballot was also a creature of a Democratic election supervisor back in 2000.
In Palm Beach County.
Right. But there does seem to be some deliberate mendacity on the part of Kemp. I mean, the record is pretty extraordinary. 53,000 votes that were suppressed at the last minute. I think, I can't remember what the exact figures are, but since his tenure, they've purged the rolls of over a million voters. I think a tenth or even a sixth of the count in Georgia. So
yeah, Brian Kemp is notorious for cheating. So, and, of course, in the last minute, a couple of days before the election, he announces that they are investigating the Democrats for hacking into the election technology without a shred of evidence.
Right.
You know, that was one of the most blatantly political shenanigans that I've ever seen.
Well, don't you think he's following the cue of his president? I mean, who pulls off those stunts on a daily basis?
Yeah.
Remember, he was going to have a middle-class tax cut before the elections, even though the House was not in session.
So, yes, and these poor people fleeing horrible conditions in Central America are Middle Eastern terrorists, mm-hmm. M13 gang members, thugs. You know, the mendacity knows no limits with Donald Trump. And Brian Kemp is cut in the same mold.
So let's then try and figure out where the moral compass is in this country with Americans themselves. I mean, we know that a majority of Americans vote Democrat, but the results are not reflected. An example that recently emerged was that the senators who voted against Kavanaugh's confirmation got 38 million more votes than the Republicans who voted to confirm Kavanaugh?
Absolutely.
And we know, of course...
Because, you know, Republicans win in small states with few
right.
people.
Right.
You know, North Dakota, with less than a million people, has the same number of senators as California, you know, with tens upon tens of millions of people.
So it doesn't seem...
We're stuck with 18th century mechanisms.
Right, but it doesn't seem to bother the Republicans that the vote is not free and fair and it's not a level playing field. So does it bother the majority of the American people? In other words, have we reached a point where power is more important than principle?
Seems to be. You know, we've seen absolutely spineless Republicans put party and power above patriotism, putting no checks of any kind on Donald Trump. We get empty rhetoric every once in a while. You know, Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, saying there'll be hell to pay if Trump stops the Mueller investigation. And we know he's not going to do a darn thing if, you know, this Trump loyalist who's just been appointed throttles the Mueller investigation. Lindsey Graham and the like will show no principle whatsoever. I have no confidence. But there is a check here, and the Democrats did win the House. Gerald Nadler, a very smart, very shrewd, very experienced member of the House from New York, will become chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which has responsibility for impeachment investigations. And he has an even better credential. He was my high school debate partner back in the 1960s at Stuyvesant High School in New York. And the Democrats can't put their finger in the wind. They can't do political calculations because they don't know. They simply have to do their constitutional duty. And if Whitaker throttles the Mueller investigation, he doesn't even have to fire Mueller. He can just essentially shut it down, which he's actually advocated in the past. Well, if he does that, the House Judiciary Committee should put politics to the rear burner and immediately begin an impeachment investigation. Because combined with everything else that the president has done, if his stooge throttles the Mueller investigation, that would be a vastly stronger case for obstruction of justice than the case against Bill Clinton in 1998. And virtually every Republican in the House, don't forget, voted an article of impeachment on obstruction of justice against Bill Clinton on a vastly less consequential matter than conspiring with the Russians to undermine our democracy.
And again, I'm speaking with Alan Lichtman, who is an American political historian who teaches at American University and has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President, and his prediction systems correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election, when against all odds he predicted a Trump victory. He's the author of the national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, and his latest book is The Embattled Vote in America, From the Founding to the Present. So when Kellyanne Conway's husband writes a piece along with Neil Katyal, both of whom are pretty well regarded in the law, that Matthew Whitaker, constitutionally speaking, Matthew Whitaker is a nobody. That, even though the law is laid down by the very conservative, the most conservative, in fact, Trump's favorite justice, Justice Thomas, in his opinion in the NLRB case, that you can't appoint people like this character, Whitaker, under the Vacancy Act, and because he doesn't have the seniority, that's a law case. That's not going to go anywhere. And you mentioned...
Nowhere.
You mentioned the subpoena power of the Democrats, which will come into effect next year. Won't Trump just ignore the subpoenas?
I think Trump will, but
yeah.
I'm not sure others will. Trump believes that the Supreme Court is now part of the Trump Organization, you know, a wholly owned subsidiary, and they'll rubber stamp anything that Trump does, including ignoring subpoenas. By the way, one of the articles of impeachment voted against Richard Nixon in the House Judiciary Committee that led to his resignation was ignoring lawful subpoenas of the Congress. But Trump won't care about that. In my book, The Case for Impeachment, I have a whole chapter called Flouting the Law, showing all the way back to the 1970s, repeatedly, time again, as a businessman, even before he became president, Trump showed an utter disregard for the law. And that has continued into his presidency. Trump cares about only one thing. And anyone who doesn't see that is either blind or self-serving. Trump cares about one thing, and that's Trump. Nothing else matters. As Michael Cohen learned, Trump has no loyalty to anyone, even his most faithful minions.
Right, but Trump, of course, has been one step ahead of the sheriff for the longest time, going right back through the 70s and 80s, when clearly the Russians rescued him from bankruptcy on a number of occasions. And it's even very likely that he was laundering hundreds of billions of money stolen by the KGB, laundered through Manhattan real estate, stolen from the...
And that's what he's most afraid of. From
yeah,
the
well, they even...
financial crimes.
Exactly. It even looks like the KGB set him up in those casinos for this specific purpose of laundering money. We know that Mueller's looking now... The latest person in the crosshairs, of course, is Roger Stone. But given Trump's record of being one step ahead of the sheriff and having contempt for the law... And I don't think he wanted this job, and he didn't think he'd get it. And the fact that he's now president has brought unusual scrutiny, which is what's got him so terrified. And that's why yesterday's press conference, I think he was just so hysterical and combative. I think this guy is terrified. But on the other hand...
And well, he should be.
Right.
But well, he should be.
But has he has he found in Whitaker, has he found his Roy Cohn?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. What other reason could there possibly be for appointing this guy who, as you point out, has absolutely no standing in the legal community, absolutely no qualifications to be the Attorney General of the United States? Whatever you may think of Jeff Sessions, and I have huge problems with Jeff Sessions, at least he was qualified to be Attorney General. It's his policies and his outlook that I objected to. This Whitaker fellow has none of the qualifications, none of the requisites to be Attorney General of the United States. It's a disgrace.
So, I mean, you know, we just had an election in which the Democrats won back the House. And, of course, the bad news for Democrats is that the Republicans extended their control of the Senate, which means that all of the outstanding judicial appointments will be pushed through the Senate. And there's even more Trump loyalists now in the Senate. So Trump will have the ability to even stack the judiciary more with far-right-wing, unqualified really bottom of the barrel jurists. You know, the law professors at the big law schools are tearing their hair out, saying the worst people in the classes are the ones that are being promoted to the federal bench. So that's what's going on. That's going to go on at warp speed. So it's obviously a mixed picture.
Very mixed. So
give us your diagnosis of, you know, we had a political energy up to this election. And that political energy should be sustained. And there's demonstrations across the country today warning against shutting down the Mueller investigation led by Indivisible. It seems to me that this is not the time to rest. This is the time to get up and fight again.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. And with someone with the authoritarian tendencies of Donald Trump, his self-absorption, his disregard for the law, vigilance is needed more than ever, because there is no way any of the Republicans who now control the Senate are going to put any check on him. And the people have to keep the pressure on the only body that could possibly check him, and that's the House, and make sure that we don't have meaningless political calculations clouding what the House must do, and that is their constitutional duty to start an impeachment investigation if Trump's minion interferes with the Mueller investigation. Understand, as I wrote in the case for impeachment, that impeachment is not some catastrophic event. The founders put impeachment in the Constitution very advisedly as a peaceful, legal, and constitutional means of dealing with a rogue president. And they knew there would be a rogue president because they had a very practical, down-to-earth sense of human nature. And it is the constitutional duty of the House, if we have a president committing high crimes and misdemeanors, such as obstructing an investigation that touches on him, his administration, and his campaign, then they must. They must, because it is their constitutional duty to begin an impeachment investigation, and no political calculation should stand in the way of that.
Well, the problem is, though, just in closing, Alan Lichtman, is that there's so many aspects of the Trump administration's criminality and ethical swamp that they haven't drained, that they're filling up, in fact. Look at this guy, Whitaker. He previously was a paid advisor to one of these bottom-feeding invention promotion companies in Florida that was accused by the U.S. government of running a multi-million-dollar scam. And court records show that Whitaker sent threatening emails to the victims of this alleged scam who tried to complain. So he seems to fit in well with these pirates like the Commerce Secretary and others who have an absolutely extraordinary record of corruption. Just the other day, somebody pointed out to me, and I'm going to look into it, obviously, that the latest scandal that nobody's paying attention to is that these waivers on tariffs that the Trump administration are granting seem to be very arbitrary and may well be tied to corruption and political favors that big corporations are being given by Trump. So that's just one.
I don't know about that, but it hardly surprised me. Nothing that Trump does surprises me.
Right, but I bring it up, though, just in closing, Alan, to point out that from the Democrats' point of view about where do you start investigations, there's so many investigations you could start. You can't spread it so thin. You got to be focused,
surely.
No,
you can't. That's right. It's got to be focused, I think, on three things. Obstruction of justice, conspiracy with the Russians to rig the election. I have no doubt that such a conspiracy existed. Whether Trump directed it or not, I don't know, but there's just so much smoke there, there's got to be fire. And thirdly, serious financial crimes. You know, there are half a dozen other things that you can go after, the emoluments clause, going after the press, but I think those are the big three that the House needs to focus on.
Well, Alan Lichtman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Anytime, Ian. Take care.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's the American political historian who teaches at American University and has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President, and his prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election when, against all odds, he predicted a Trump victory. The author of the national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, his latest book is The Embattled Vote in America, From the Founding to the Present. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me. And I'm back in with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.